Born in the grip of oppression, I fought for my liberty. I paid with the blood of my people. Freedom has never been free. Now my door's always open to dreamers and friends. But when I'm attacked, I protect and defend. Because my name is America, I stand proud and free.
Welcome everyone. Hope you had a fabulous weekend. Over the weekend, actually what happened was I started listening to a lot of music from the 60s and 70s, and I turned off all of the news because I didn't even want to hear it. And I was really checking to see the similarities between the 60s and 70s and today, because these are the people who are ruling America, the ones that came out of all of those and bombings and dissension and everything anti-establishment. That was the mantra. If it was anti-establishment, we're going to do it. Well, those are the people that are ruling the country today. And unless we understand what their motivation is, which is money and power, nothing else. They don't care about you. They don't care about me. They don't care about our children. They don't care about the country. They don't care about anything except lining their own pockets. And this is what we are living with today, is their ideology from the 60s and 70s. Because those people who were part of the Weather Underground, look that one up if you don't know what it is, or the Black Panthers, look that one up if you don't know what it is, they actually bombed buildings in America in the 60s and 70s. And where are these people today? They're in jail. No, they're not. Where they are is in our universities, teaching our kids to do almost exactly the same thing. And it gets worse and worse and worse. But there is a silver lining. As I said, this was probably the hardest time in American history that we actually are living through. But then I'm glad that there are enough of us left who understand what freedom and liberty are really all about and what is going to happen to this country if we allow this to continue. And we've got about 7 more months of this garbage before we can actually make a change. And that's what we are all about, giving you enough resources so that you can go out and be a truth warrior and help us get rid of the people who are trying to destroy America. And by getting rid of, I mean getting rid of them politically. So let's not go off on a tangent. We're lucky today because I have a friend who has agreed to come back and join us. And her name is Claire Lopez. And Claire can be found at Lopez Liberty LLC, and you would want to go and read things that Claire writes about, because Claire was heavily involved in this national security. And to me, nothing is more important today as we talk this minute is our southern border and what this administration intends to do by bringing in millions of people, undocumented, illegal aliens into this country. What will happen? What will be the result? And what do we have to look forward to? And so, friends, you are listening to Karen Schoen. This is the Prism of America's Education, and we are brought to you on the America Out Loud Talk Radio Network with my wonderful sponsor, who is fighting continually the Florida Citizens Alliance. Claire Lopez, thank you so much for joining me today. And I know with all of your hard work on national security, you know exactly what's going on our southern border.
Well, thank you, Karen, for having me again. I'm glad to be with you.
Claire, what are we going to do? Because this past Friday, as usual, on a Friday when nobody's paying attention, the Biden administration eliminated Title 42, which says that you have to remain in Mexico. You cannot come into America because we are facing a, quote, pandemic. Well, does it matter if the pandemic goes away, if these people come in with diseases? Who are these people anyway? We have no idea. And the administration is going to make sure that we have no idea. What do you think, Claire?
Well, I have to agree with you, Karen, totally. The Biden administration, really since day one, has been determined to throw open our southern border to one and all. The last thing I heard is that something like over 150 something nations have been represented in the illegals that they have caught. Now, those are the ones that they've caught, not what they call gotaways, caught at the southern border. Over these last, months, taking aim at this provision 42 will only exacerbate the situation. It will only make it worse. And that's the point. The Democrats know, I think as most Americans do, that the upcoming congressional midterm elections in November of this year, 2022, very likely will see a red tidal wave sweeping out many of the Democrats currently in Congress, and maybe hopefully a bunch of rhinos too, replacing them with solid conservative people, or even if Democrats, people with common sense and national security mindedness. So this is a disaster. We've got to get through another 7 months before that election takes place. But I would hope that even now in Congress, there would be some on the Democrat side who would stand up and say, whoa, just wait a minute. This is not in our national security interest. Whether these illegals be Central Americans looking for better lives, or, and we do not know, Islamic jihadis looking to attack us, or just people from who knows where carrying all kinds of diseases, including things that previously had been eradicated in the United States. Very dangerous things, antibiotic resistance, resistant tuberculosis, all kinds of infectious diseases. We have no idea because they're just waved through. They're given a piece of paper that says, please show up someday. And they say, yes, yes, of course. And off they go. Sometimes on U.S. taxpayer-funded transportation, buses and planes, to be dispersed all over the United States. This is criminal, and it's got to stop.
Okay, so let's hypothetically say, and I agree with you, there will be a red wave, and we are lucky and able to get rid of enough rhinos and put in enough people who are nationalists. And what does that mean? That means that they want America first. They love our country and they want our country to succeed, not fail. So let's say we get these people in, and I agree with you, they could be either Democrats or Republicans. However, I feel that the Democrats are so locked into their plan of destruction that it is hard sometimes to separate them. And especially when you have them in bloc voting for a Supreme Court justice who thinks that pedophilia is a good thing, that it's helping. I don't get that one at all. But that's another topic. Oh, Biden, I was going to say, and I'm going to say that because Obama showed up at the White House. Why did he show up at the White House? Because Obamacare is now being enhanced to include more perks for illegals, all paid for by the American taxpayer. Oh, no. It's free. It's free, they tell us. Sure, as they go and print more and more money. But really, what does this do, Claire, to the economy? I have been thinking about this, and since the chambers of commerce, or the chambers of horror, or the chambers of destruction, which is what they are looking for, are only concerned with their bottom line and could care less about who their workers are, and they are willing to pay 2 cents on the dollar. And many of these people are willing to work for 2 cents on the dollar because in their hometown, they were getting 2 cents on whatever their currency was for the month instead of even for a day or an hour. So, yes, things are bad in the countries that these people have been coming from. But I have two questions. One is, after these people come here, and let's face it, folks, they're going to be here. And unless we have a crew that's willing to get rid of them, they're going to be. But let's say they're here. And after they are here for a while, they have come from countries that are so abusive. Do you think that they want to put in place more abusive programs, Claire? Do you think that that's what they're going to be driving at, as the Democrats think we're going to bring in all new voters? Do you think that these people will vote to bring communism back in place from leaving a country of communism? Do you think, how do you think that's going to play out?
Well, I mean, it very much depends on where these illegal aliens come from and exactly who they are. If they come here with a credible, a valid claim to persecution in their home country, not just poor economic conditions or gangs or, rampant crime. That's not what you get asylum for in the United States. You may make a claim for asylum if you have reason to believe that because of your race, religion, belief, faith, political beliefs, background, that you will be or have been are being persecuted in your home country. That is a claim that may be made for political asylum and should be adjudicated on a case-by-case basis. But I'm sorry, if you're just coming here as an illegal alien to crash our border illegally, which makes you a criminal, the moment you step across that border illegally, that is a federal crime. At some point in the future, under a different administration, with the Department of Homeland Security, and in particular ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, we're going to have to get serious about rounding these people up and shipping them back to wherever they came from, because they're here illegally. Now, why are they here? And your question was about, what would they, promote or stand for once they get here? First of all, they have no legal right to vote. First of all, if you're not a citizen, if you cannot prove your citizenship with a valid government issued ID, you have no right to vote, period. But we know what the Democrats are trying to do is flood the system with illegals who they would like to permit to vote, whether or not they're legal, whether or not they have proper ID or anything else. What would they like to do? Well, it depends on where they come from. You saw how quickly the Secretary of Homeland Security, Mayorkas, slammed down any possibility of Cubans desperately trying to escape a communist, repressive, tyrannical regime in Cuba and get here as political asylees, slammed them right out. But others, who would come here to change our system, who do not come here with the intention to accept and embrace our Judeo-Christian based, founded constitution, foundational documents, Declaration of Independence, and legal system derived from that Judeo-Christian based constitution, if they come here with the intent to change that, to disobey that, to replace that with something else, be it Islamic law, Sharia, or anything else, communist dictatorship, well, those are the ones that need to be looked at. And if they are here illegally, shipped out. That's it. Sent back.
So when you are vetting your candidates, that should be the first question that you ask anybody that is running for the U.S. House or Senate. What will you do with the illegals that have come here throughout the Biden administration, who, as Claire just said, have come here illegally and have committed a crime against our federal law? They are criminals, period. And I read sometime a long time ago that if you commit a crime, you're not supposed to get favored status. You're not supposed to get all kinds of free perks because you have committed a crime. If you and I left and came back, we would be scrutinized. We'd have to walk through all kinds of security devices. These people walk right in. So what's really going on? And as Claire just said, what we are attempting to bring in, and I won't say we, let me rephrase that, what the administration is attempting to bring in are people who come from countries who really, truly hate America and want America changed because that's the goal. However, Claire, I did see some good news, and it seems as though the crowd in Davos and several of their top people are saying that the Putin-Ukraine war has put a tremendous hurt on globalism. Isn't that a wonderful thing? And I don't think people realize, because this is another part of what I have been thinking, Trump and Putin, I believe, were able to talk to each other, which is what world leaders should do. They may not be close friends. That has nothing to do with it. I'm talking about talk to each other because they shared common ground. Oh, my goodness, how could they share common ground? Well, both of them are nationalists. Now, Putin believes in Russia and wants Mother Russia to rule. That's okay. He's a nationalist. He believes in his country. Trump, on the other hand, believed in America, and he wanted America to be first. That's the purpose of nationalism. So they both had a common ground against globalism. Am I on the right track, Claire?
Well, not quite, I think. Yes. President Trump absolutely was an America first patriot, no question. And yes, world leaders do need to talk with one another. That is certainly true. And President Trump spoke with many world leaders, you know, and it doesn't mean that he was sympathizing with them or agreeing with them or condescending to them. He was talking to them as world leader to world leader, and that's appropriate. Going to Vladimir Putin, the president of Russia, yes, he's a nationalist. Yes, he is a Christian, an Orthodox Christian. Does not mean the same thing as the Baptist down the street here in America. Not at all the same thing. But Putin also, yes, is a Russian nationalist. But who has a different concept of Russia than the Westphalian treaty status of sovereign nation states, independent and sovereign within their own borders? Putin is a nationalist in the way of his forebear, of Vladimir of Rus, who back in 988 CE converted to Christianity and brought the entire Russian Slavic people with him. That's how it was done in those days. And Putin has been on record as saying that the biggest catastrophe of his life was the 1991 breakup of the Soviet Union. So he obviously has an affinity, a love even, of Mother Russia, but as he conceives it, it is empirical. It is out for conquest and domination and subjugation of others. This is the difference between his nationalism and President Trump's. And so Putin is trying to reestablish as much of the lost glory, as he would see it, of Russia before the Soviet Union broke up. And so he looks also at Ukraine as, honestly, it truly was the cradle of the Russian people. Because in those days, 1,000 and more years ago, Kievan Rus was the cradle of Russian civilization. That's where Rus began, not Moscow, Kiev. So in Putin's mind, he thinks he has the right to just invade, take over, grab it back, pound the cities into rubble, slaughter people. The horrific human rights abuses, atrocities in the photos coming out of Bucha today and the last day or two, a place near Kiev, which was under Russian control for many weeks and has now been seized back, taken back by the incredible performance of the Ukrainian army, and they're finding civilian bodies strewn all over the streets, hands bound, shot in the head, mass graves. This is Putin's nationalism. Yes, it's nationalism, but it is an empirical kind of nationalism that sees conquest and domination instead of the Westphalian system that we inherited from 1683 of sovereign nation states, individual liberty of people within their own borders. I'll add one more thing here before I turn it back to you, Karen, and that is, I don't know if you and your listeners, any speak Russian or Ukrainian. They're different languages, but quite similar, both Slavic. And in Ukrainian and Russian, the very name of the country, Ukraine, is made up of two words, Ukraina. U means at. Kraina means the farthest outpost or the far border of what? Of Russia. That's the name of the country. And that's how Vladimir Putin thinks of it. Ukrainians don't. They think of their country as independent and sovereign, as it should be. And apparently much of the world does too, especially looking at these horrific atrocities coming out now from places like Bucha.
Well, I want to thank you for clarifying that. That was a big difference. And yes, after listening to you, you are 100% correct. So I will go back and rephrase what I said. Yes, they both believe in nationalism, but their idea of nationalism is totally different. And I would think the only thing that they are united against is globalism. So that might be the common ground.
If I might, I'm sorry to interrupt.
That's okay.
I forgot to mention about globalism. We'll note, of course, that the World Economic Forum has kicked Russia out. He's no longer welcome at Davos. Because why? Because Putin's dream of globalism, and he does dream of globalism, is conquest. Conquest by Russia. Conquest by Marxism, communism. Now, he'll call it something else, and he criticizes Lenin, absolutely. His concept might be different, but his idea is absolutely globalism of, let's call it, tyranny. Absolutely, he's a globalist. But World Economic Forum doesn't want any more of him, and they have kicked him out.
Well, I guess they are more serious about destroying the global economy than of shooting missiles. And that would be the big difference, I believe, because the crowd at Davos, make no mistake, folks, they are out to destroy Western economy. Their goal is to crash the dollar, just like they did the pound in Europe. That was done by Soros. And they have a concerted effort to do the same to the dollar by, quote, replacing the dollar with a digital currency. Claire, what would do you think an influence of a digital currency have on America?
Well, I'm not so familiar with the concept. I will admit, I don't think the dominance of the U.S. dollar is going anyplace soon. Even now, with Vladimir Putin's attempt to demand payment for gas and oil from Russia to places, for example, in Europe, to demand payment in rubles. Notice how he set that up. He set it up that those countries buying or wanting to buy oil and gas from Russia would actually pay Russia in hard currency. Why? Because the hard currency, the euro, the dollar, are still very much dominant and will be for the foreseeable future. And then in Russia, in Russian banks, those hard currencies would be converted at a Russian set rate to the ruble, which he now says is going to be backed by gold. Well, can you imagine what he will do to that exchange rate if people allow that to happen? So what we're seeing now, of course, is that European countries like Germany are scrambling, wonder why they didn't do this before, scrambling to find alternative sources of energy. Thankfully, winter is ending, spring is coming, and they may have a bit of breathing space in which to diversify their supply and move away from Russia. Bottom line, the dollar is still king, and it's probably going to be for a long time.
I pray that you are correct. I am really concerned about the idea of digital currency. And the reason why I look at it more than anything else is because it is now being tied to the ESG score of a corporation, of which social credits then become the dominant for individuals. What they're saying is, you don't agree with the government? We'll take away your rights, your right to own a car, your right to, it's not a right, your ability to own a car, your ability to own a house, your ability to be mobile and to be able to do as you see fit in a free country. Once digital currency is in place and you go and put your credit card in a machine and it says, oh my goodness, you made a derogatory remark on Twitter last week about the government. So you just lost 50,000 credits and therefore you can't buy gas. This is where it's going. And this is why we do not want a digital currency and why 20 states, if your state is not part of the 20 that has eliminated ESG, then please, by all means, make sure you pick up the phone and call your legislator and tell them. And these would be your state legislators. You do not want state banks. You do not want credit unions. You do not want anyone that is measuring anything on ESG scores to be part of your economic programming in your state. So this is very important that we take a look at this and we do a deep dive on it. And you can go to the Heartland Institute to their website, and they have a listing of the states that are involved in this legislation. Well, Claire, I want to thank you so much because you have taught me something, and I always appreciate it when I learn. That's what this is all about, folks. Learn something new every day. And I was not equating Putin's idea of the end result of nationalism. I was picking up on the word nationalism. So see why programs like this are so important? Now you have a new thing to talk about. Claire, tell everyone where they can find you, and I'm going to ask you to come back again.
Well, thanks so much, Karen. Good to be with you always. I'll be glad to come back. In the meantime, you can find me posting videos, radio shows like this one at places like Citizens Commission on National Security, the United West. Also, I am newly a senior advisory board member for Sargis Sangari's Near East Center for a Strategic Engagement. You can find me on social media. I'm on Twitter at Claire M. Lopez, Facebook, my name, also the same. And I'm on Telegram at Lopez Liberty. Unfortunately, I do not yet have a website, so we'll have to work on that a little bit harder.
Good luck, and hopefully you'll get your website, but it doesn't matter because we're still getting great information from you. Okay, folks, don't go away. Just stay right where you are. You might want to get a pen and paper and write down some of this information that you just learned. You're listening to Karen Schoen. This is the Prism of America's Education brought to you on the America Out Loud Talk Radio Network, my wonderful sponsor, the Florida Citizens Alliance, and I will be right back.
You've been in that situation. The person next to you is sniffling, or worse yet, coughing. Flu, cold, and SARS-CoV-2 are everywhere. Would you like an additional layer of protection to reduce these threats with an invisible mask? Sold by hundreds of pharmacists and medical doctors, our American-made povidone iodine antiviral nasal spray, Cofix RX, lasts for hours, deactivating viruses and germs that make us sick. Find a retailer near you or buy online at CofixRx.com. America Out Loud listeners use promo code OUTLOUD for 20% off. Stay protected with Cofix RX.
Trouble getting to sleep and staying asleep can be infuriating. Your mind races. You toss and turn, and the harder you try, the harder it is to drift off. And today's digital age makes it even harder. You're not alone with this struggle. Poor sleep affects over 70% of Americans. Even the Centers for Disease Control labeled insufficient sleep a public health epidemic. To take back your sleep, HealthyCell has created created REM Sleep, the only sleep supplement made to support all four stages of human sleep with calming herbs, amino acids, and sleep hormone support. Delivered in a patent-pending, pill-free, ultra-absorption microgel formula that tastes great. Fall asleep, stay asleep, sleep deeply, and wake up refreshed with Healthy Cell's REM Sleep. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order. That's HealthyCell.com, HealthyCell, and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
People often ask me, Malcolm, how do we fight the corruption? Robert Frost has said it best, freedom lies in being bold. Well, for six incredible years, bold is America out loud. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
In today's world, there's no escaping the headlines filled with warnings about emerging viruses and dangerous superbugs. Genesis is the only technology that safely and effectively obliterates harmful pathogens both in the air and on surfaces. Genesis plus HOCL neutralize these threats to your environment in just seconds. Find out more about this amazing technology at genesisfogger.com/outloud for a 15% discount. With Genesis, you'll be prepared for what's next.
Welcome back, everyone. This is Karen Schoen, and you are listening to the Prism of America's Education brought to you on the America Out Loud Talk Radio Network with my wonderful sponsor, the Florida Citizens Alliance, who worked very hard to get the bill passed that gives parents choice. This is so important, folks. Parents need a choice over their children as to what school they are sending their children to. As a former teacher, one of the things I could not understand is why were the parents continuing to send their children to school when the school is doing such egregious things to the children? Folks, we all know that this crowd, this Marxist globalist group, is all motivated by money. And as a former teacher, the attendance of the child, not so much how they're doing, but the fact that they have showed up is what gives the school money. So if you are in opposition to what your school is teaching your child, in Florida, we now have options. Please go to the Florida Citizens Alliance website, and that is goflca.com, and see some of the things that we are working on and copy them and put them in your state. The K through 3 bill should really be K through 12. Parents should be opting in, not opting out. The schools should be very transparent in what the parents are allowed to show and in what the teachers are allowed to teach and show our children. When I was a teacher, one of the things that I used to do with my class, which worked so well, I included the parents. And when my children were misbehaving, I would tell them, I'm not here to discipline you. That's not my job. My job is to educate you. So if you can't behave yourself, then we'll have mommy or daddy come to school and they can sit with you and they can show you what is right and wrong and how you should behave in a classroom. Well, after doing that a couple of times and having the parents come in and sitting with their children, guess what happened? The children started behaving. There is a bond between the child, the parent, and the teacher. But make no mistake, the teacher loves your child for that year. But when that year is over and a new class comes in, they have to show the same love to the new class. But who is the constant love in the child's life? Is the parent. And that is what is so important. We cannot allow the school to separate the family. And this is the goal of globalists. They must destroy the nuclear family. It is such an important thing for them to do because, as far as they are concerned, the only homage that a child should pay is to the teacher. That is a travesty. I have a wonderful guest who I just met. Kevin McGarry is amazing, and I am so excited to have Kevin with me today because it is so important that we understand that it is the media that is dividing the people. There is no division between people. We are all Americans. We all believe in America. We all know that it is the ability of the person that makes that person who they are today, not the color of their skin. And we cannot allow the media to let this happen to us, just like we have allowed the media to destroy the nuclear family. Kevin, thank you so much for joining me today. What do you think is the important role of the nuclear family in the child's upbringing?
Yes, well, thank you for having me, Karen. It's a real honor and a privilege to be here. What is the role of the nuclear family? The role is to provide protection, to provide support, to provide health, to provide all of your basic necessities for sustenance and good living. The goal is to provide a way forward so our children will be the new and improved parts of us. So the goal traditionally has always been, look, we want to be a nuclear family. Ideally with a father at least connected to the children so the children can have a strong sense of who they are and where they fit in the world. And strong affirmations from a father will help with that. And then, from there, then children grow healthy and knowledgeable and provide a way forward, not only for themselves, but then they can repeat the process for their children. Unfortunately, the nuclear family has been decimated recently, and especially with policies that have occurred over the past, let's say, 12, 15 years. For the first time in American history, do we actually have subsequent generations not excelling past the point of where their parents did. We actually have generations that are growing up now that will not accomplish, what they're even get to the point hopefully the wealth progress of where their parents are today. They'll accomplish much, much, much less. And a lot of that has to do with the destruction of the family, economic conditions, world globalism, Marxism and all those things. But the bottom line is the nuclear family is under attack. It has been for a long time. And now we're feeling it in a big way. So
we certainly are. And you made a very important comment, and that is about fatherhood. I remember one of the books that I used to have when I was teaching was called Rescue Mission Planet Earth. And folks, write that down. Rescue Mission Planet Earth. The book is no longer in print, but as we were being told that we were crazy and had three heads and were needed our tinfoil hats, this book was circulating in the New York City schools. And it was also, the subtitle was A Child's Edition of Agenda 21. And one of the things that stuck out with me was a paragraph that I read constantly because this is what our children were told. And one of the things that they were told was that men have no responsibility in the bringing up of a child, and men often exploit and use children for their own advantage. Now, when you tell a child that, especially a boy, Kevin, what would happen to that boy as they grow up if that's the only thing they learn?
Well, what happens with that is we have the breakdown of not only the families, but we have the breakdown of community. We have breakdown of the civil society, because now we have a lot of young men that were raised in a single family household, mostly by their mother or grandmother, with no father figure. And what that does is it creates in them a need to identify and to be affirmed by some kind of father figure. And typically what that means is they'll join a gang or they'll try to go after, other ways to sort of make themselves feel like they're accomplishing something as a male, a young male. And a lot of times it ends up in destructive behavior, like gang warfare, criminality of all types. And unfortunately, that's what we're seeing right now in a big way as a result of the lack of father connection. Now, we do understand that it's because of the hookup culture, there's a lot of children that have been born, rather than be born than aborted, certainly. But there's a lot of children that have been born that are born outside of that male, their father being connected at all to their mother. I mean, it was just a, you know, one night stand or hookups type situation. But what we encourage fathers to do is look, just remain connected. Yeah, it may be unrealistic that you'd be a nuclear family, that you go and marry that young lady or the young ladies, because you may have multiple. But if you just remain connected to your children, it will help in a big way. Social anthropologists have determined that we can reduce crime and poverty. Let me say this. We can reduce crime and poverty by upwards of 70% by just having fathers connected with their children and having school choice. So those two things in particular have really eroded culture to the degree that we have right now. But we can significantly enhance our criminal statistics and our poverty statistics if we just do those two things. Encourage fathers to remain connected to their children and offer a school choice program so we can have alternate learning platforms for our children.
I could not agree more. And the other thing that we should, if we cannot, we should understand that there are kids that are out there in need. So one of the things that we can do is volunteer and become that familiar figure that the child would be able to bounce things off if it is impossible that they have a nuclear family. Children are amazing. They seek approval, and they're going to get approval from somebody. We want them to get approval from mom and dad and their pastor. But instead, as you just said, Kevin, if they don't get approval from mom and dad, they're going to turn to somebody else. And too often that somebody else is a gang. It is not just overt to say we have to get rid of gangs. And this is where I think our prison reform has absolutely failed, and letting these kids out of prison without any kind of mentoring type of program, just go back out on the street, guarantees they're going to do the same thing over again.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We have to do a much better job of really rehabilitating these young men as they're in prison and making sure that when they get out, that there is actually a way forward for them and not just throwing them back into the streets where they can catch up with their old gang members and old drug dealers and do the same old thing all over again.
And I also believe that if we went into our prisons and we actually sat down with the inmates that are there and asked them to read, you would be shocked because they can't read. And that is the biggest thing that I see, which is the biggest hindrance to any adult. If you can't read, as my favorite hero, who I used to post all of his quotes all over my classroom, was Frederick Douglass, of which you are the founder of the Frederick Douglass. Can you tell us about that? He was such a wonderful man. And his focus was on reading. And what he did was motivate my kids to be able to read, because when they learned his life and all of the things that he had been through and how he pulled himself out just by learning to read, it opened up a whole new world for him.
Absolutely. I'm the president and chairman of the Frederick Douglass Foundation of California. So our foundation is really trying to help everyone understand the life and legacy of the Honorable Frederick Douglass. What an incredible man he was. So he really was the civil rights pioneer for America. I mean, you know, everybody, when you think about civil rights, everyone immediately goes to Dr. Martin Luther King, but he was like the second or third iteration. The civil rights pioneer for the United States was Frederick Douglass, and his work with Abraham Lincoln, President Abraham Lincoln, it was so incredible at the time. But you're speaking about his legacy as it relates to education and reading. One of the things a lot of people don't understand is when Douglass was born, he was actually born into slavery and went to his first slave house when he was, young toddler age, 4, 5, 6. And the mother of the house started to teach her son to read and started to teach little Freddie to read at the same time. And her husband came home one day and found her teaching the boys their ABCs, basic, how do you recognize letters and enunciate. And he was livid. He says, no, you can't teach a slave how to read. Otherwise, they're no more good. They'll set themselves free. Little Frederick Douglass heard this and he says, aha. So whether I'm in chains physically or not, I can be set free if I just, really mastered the art of reading, enunciation, and understanding. And so he took that very seriously. He felt that, God really took it to another level when he used to sneak down in the middle of the night and open up books in the study and read his mom's Bible. He felt that God actually divinely helped him to further the understanding and reading and that kind of thing. He was a master orator and well-known around the world, and certainly his writings are well-established. He became a profound writer even in that time and was well-known worldwide because of his writing skill and his oratorial skills. And so it's very, very important that we do understand the importance of education, and we could learn a lot if we just read the life and times of the Honorable Frederick Douglass.
A wonderful man. Kevin, before we go any further, tell everybody where they can find you and some of the work that you have been doing.
Okay, so I am the co-founder of Every Black Life Matters, and you can find us at everyblm.com. And I'd just like to say a little bit about that. So essentially, we started about a year and a half ago after the George Floyd murder. There was a lot of emotional outcry as a result of what we saw for 9 minutes and 40 some odd seconds. The emotions ran the gamut from coast to coast, but a lot of our urban centers were aflame. A lot of riots, violence, vitriol, hatred, just a lot of things were happening across the country. What was troubling for me as a man of faith was that we saw so many churches and people of faith out marching with BLM as they were doing these riotous behaviors, and not protesting, but actually riotous behaviors. So what we realize is that, look, when these church folk get home and they actually do their own due diligence, go to the BLM website, that these pastors and these parishioners will understand that BLM is completely antithetical in every way to their faith, and they'll be looking for a righteous and faithful alternative. So we started Every Black Life Matters because we wanted to stay in the same lane, but we wanted to actually be the alternative for people of faith and people of moral conscience who reject Marxism, witchcraft and incantations, the anti-fatherhood, anti-man affirming, BLM type mantras, people who would want an organization that's really serious about doing something about the plight, disproportional plight in the Black community, but doing it in a way that affirms fatherhood, affirms life from conception to natural death, affirms school choice programs, affirms free markets and capitalism, those things that really do make a big difference in the life of Blacks and helping to turn the tide from, from poverty to success. And so that's what we are. So some people do ask, though, because I know some of your listeners will be, why did you have to, keep with the same sort of naming convention, Every Black Life? And it seems like you're still dividing. And I'd like to just describe that a little bit. So when Margaret Sanger started her quote unquote family planning clinics back in the day, she said, look, we don't want the word to get out, but we want to fully exterminate the Negro population. She didn't say the Negro and Asian, the Negro and Hispanic, the Negro. And she said, Blacks. I want to kill some Blacks, essentially, is what she was saying. That was her business model for what we call today Planned Parenthood, because that was her model, and they have been, unfortunately, very successful at it. If we care at all about every life mattering or all lives mattering, fundamentally, we have to address the problem of Black genocide, because indeed all lives do matter. Every life does matter. If we say, no, all things are equal, let's just move on. Let's not, you know, continue this mantra. Then we will allow essentially Blacks to be killed at a disproportional rate in the womb compared to every other ethnicity. So we wanted to illuminate the fact every Black life matters too, T-O-O. This is not a statement of superiority. This is a statement of equality. We think that we should have equal opportunity to live at the same rate that other ethnicities does. So that's why, that's the significance of the name. If you want to find out more, there's an entire article I wrote on this. It's right on the website. You can just download and get it. And you get more of my thoughts on that. But anyway, so that's how we came up with Every Black Life Matters. And also the other thing, let me say this real quick. When BLM comes up and they ask you or your listeners, do Black lives matter? You could say, look, to me and my family, every single Black life matters. And then you can ask them, now, does every single Black life matter to you? That's really a poignant question. And you'll see them sort of squirm away when you come with that questioning. So anyway.
You are absolutely right. And again, folks, remember what I always say. When you are talking to people who disagree with you, don't go at them, ask them questions, because for the most part, they never thought of the questions that you would be asking because they're fed sound bites of a predetermined situation. And they often, unfortunately, can't think outside the box. So by asking them, that's a very good question. Does every Black life matter? You are now making them accountable for their decision, which is often off the rails. You are also involved, I noticed, with entrepreneurship and helping people start their own business. How did you get involved in that? That is so interesting a wonderful thing to be doing.
Yeah. So the key is if we can actually open up various learning platforms, school choice and that kind of thing, what we encourage schools to do, especially the charter and private and other types of schools, is to incorporate, entrepreneurial thinking, again, critical thinking and entrepreneurial thinking. So our students, when they graduate, they won't be sort of pigeonholed to think that they have to go into debt and go to these very expensive 4-year colleges. They can go to a trade, a learning center and master a trade and become an entrepreneur if they want. I mean, entrepreneurialism is not out of the realm of possibility. You have some people that recognize entrepreneurialism is very, very, very easy today because there's podcasting that anyone can do out of their basement. So guess what? Some podcasters are making $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 a month. They could be sitting up there smoking a joint. As long as they have, tens of thousands of people following them while they're smoking, they can be making money. So bottom line is entrepreneurialism is not it's not magic. It's not, something that we should be afraid of. It's something that we should be looking forward to and running toward. And we just try to encourage all those we come in contact with how easy it is to become your own business owner. And that's going to be important if you're going to establish a platform of success for you and your family.
Oh, is that ever so important? And you are so right. Entrepreneurship and folks starting your own business is, but you have to be prepared and work with the right people. And Kevin, you're one of the right people, and it is a pleasure. Before we leave, I have a question that I always try to find a solution for, and that is, you're Black, I'm white. We have a media that is trying to divide us. We have a group of people that is trying to divide us on race. What do you suggest? How can me, as a white person, break that barrier so that my Black friends or even Blacks that I don't know, we don't start off thinking that there's a racist divide between us? What would you suggest that we do?
Well, first of all, we have to embrace the truth. And the truth of the matter is When we start thinking about systems like critical race theory and liberation theology and Black liberation theology, social justice and those things, those are the types of systems that divide. They don't unify us. They don't put us on the same page. We have to recognize that bowing and being guilted into a position doesn't help our relationships either authentically. So what we have to do is start from a standpoint of recognizing that, yes, we are different, but you know, we are human. So we have the basic foundation. It's just someone may have lacked the melanin that the other person has. So it's just a matter of mutual respect that we need to, you know, we need to recognize and acknowledge. And from there, we need to be intentional about not showing or exhibiting any kind of partiality just based on, somebody's, immutable characteristics or proclivities. So as long as we can learn to respect one another, that yes, it's okay, we come from different places, but it doesn't mean that we're separated. We're all part of the human race. I think we can get this together.
I could not agree more. Kevin, unfortunately, we are at the end of our show. So if you can tell everyone where they can find you, that would be terrific.
Everyblm.com, everyblm.com. Please join us. We have partnership programs and all kinds of wonderful resources out there. Please go to the website, learn more about us, and join us. Help us in this quest to actually unify America and improve the conditions within the Black community. We really appreciate it.
Thank you. And thank you so much for joining me today.
Excellent. Thank you, Karen.
Well, folks, we have a lot of work to do. And one of the most important things that is to recognize that people are people. That is what should bring us together, not divide us. And we cannot allow these people who have nothing other than malice in their heart, that want this country to fail, that want the American people to fail, that want there to be a big divide, because divided people are easier to control. Remember, folks, this crowd is interested in only three things. The globalists want money, power, and control, and they don't care what they have to do to get it. They will lie on a continual basis, and that is up to us to make sure that we get past those lies and that we see our friends and neighbors for who they really are. People just like us trying to get along in this crazy, tumultuous world. Thank you all for listening. This is Karen Schoen. You have been listening to The Prism of America's Education, and we are brought to you on the America Out Loud Talk Radio Network with my wonderful sponsor, the Florida Citizens Alliance. The Alliance, as I said, is very responsible for helping to get that new parental choice bill in Florida passed. And it makes me feel so proud to be able to say that and to see other states who are now copying what is going on. It's an old cliche, but it is true. Children are our future. And if we don't take care of them and nurture them and teach them to be the best that they can be in this crazy world, then we have failed. And that failure is not an option. Thank you all for listening. See you all again next week.
But I'll always stand proud and free. I'm America. Don't tread on me.